Good morning.
Morning.
How's everybody today? Everybody good? I'd like to begin just by saying thank you to you folks. I kind of mentioned a little bit in the Sunday school that my wife and I see ourselves pretty much as an extension of you guys. And as Pastor read the verses out of Luke, you know, I could have received that call a long time ago, but if there weren't people here, sending money to the Great Commission Fund and sending us off, giving us a district to do our home service in and all that, then it just doesn't happen. And so I really wanted to thank you for your faithfulness. The fact that we've been there for the 27 years is a testimony to people like you have given for 27 years, right? And so we just see ourselves as an extension. And all of us work together during the Great Commission in the way in which God has asked us to do it. And the beautiful part about it is we're all gifted in different ways. We can all minister and serve in different ways. And the key is just to say yes and answer, right? Just be obedient. That's all God really wants from us. And so on behalf of my family and also on our team in Mexico, we have about 12 people right now that are serving in the Guadalajara city, the city of Guadalajara with us. And we have one person in Mexico City, and on behalf of all of them as well, I wanted to say thank you for being faithful over all the years. It's a blessing to us. I'm going to ask you to, if you would have your Bibles open to John chapter 10, that's where we're going to be focusing in on today. We're going to get there a little bit later on, but that'll be the main passage we'll be looking at today is John chapter 10, verses 14 to 16. So when you get that, if we're all set, then I'd ask we would bow our heads to seek the Lord in prayer this morning. Lord Jesus, we are so thankful that we have a place to meet today. We're thankful that here in Clappertown, we can preach the message, we can pray, we can talk to people, we can do everything freely. And that's a blessing, Lord. We know that in many places of the world, that's not necessarily the case. And so we thank you for that privilege to be able to worship together today. We're praying, Lord, and asking you to speak today through your word. And I pray that your spirit will have freedom to work in each one of our lives and to speak to us in the way that you want, Lord. And I pray that that freedom will happen. And Lord, give us the grace we need to respond as you are asking us and as you speak into our hearts and prick us, Lord. I pray that we'll be able to just be able to say yes to what you're saying to us. So Lord, we ask your blessing now on the word and our time together. And we ask this all in Jesus' name. Amen. How many of you would say that you think you've been to the regions beyond? If you can think about that. If you look at the flyers that you have up, the theme on there is that, right? To the regions beyond. And so when I begin to think about what I'm going to talk about, that being the theme, you know, the question becomes, well, do we know what that is or have we been to those places? You know, it can be a different place for everybody. Right? The regions beyond for you might be very different than what it would be maybe for me. But I imagine that most everyone here has an idea of what that would probably look like for them. So have any of you guys ever been to a place like that? And if you have, what place was that? If anybody has been. Yeah? What would you say in the back?
I just went down into Mexico because my brother was in Texas living.
Uh-huh.
And his wife is Mexican and she speaks Spanish. And
right.
So when we went into the town across from El Paso.
Okay.
We were told by my sister-in-law, don't get anything to eat or drink.
Okay.
Because of the place being not so clean, because it was just a small amount.
Yeah.
And so she, of course, speaking Spanish was really given to the children that were on the streets. She
uh-huh.
Told them they should be in school learning and that. So she wasn't being mean, but she was just making it an issue to her. So it was nice just to see how just that small area that I saw.
Okay.
Very interesting, but that's it. I wouldn't want to live there.
Okay. The border is a very different place. It's not really like Mexico, the way Mexico is. It's just a mixture of everything when you get on the border cities. Did you have one in the very backpack?
I was in Africa for
mission. Oh, okay.
Tanzania.
Okay, that could be very much the region to be on, right? Tanzania. Yeah, when I would think about, you know, what it might look like, you know, the regions beyond, I think certain things come into your mind. You think of, well, it's probably a place that is way, way far away from everything else. And then maybe there's, you know, like no people or very few people. And maybe like nobody goes there. Nobody wants to be there because it's just so far away. And think of things like, well, probably in a place like that, you know, you're not going to have certain things you would have here. You probably don't have running water, maybe. You probably don't have electricity. For those, now everybody has cell phones, so you figure in these places you probably don't have any kind of signal, so you couldn't contact somebody if you had to. But it was funny, when I was going out to I think we were just going up to Mahaffey, when you're crossing over toward Nanigalo, I think, somewhere like that, you try and get something, you don't have anything up there either. So it doesn't really necessarily matter, I guess, where you're at, you might not have that. But, you know, you think of, at least in Mexico, I think of places where you'd go to homes and it's just a one-room home. You know, that size maybe four or five pews back and to the middle to there. And a family lives there, and the kitchen's outside. You know, what they would make of its kitchen is outside. The bathroom is also, you know, is not near the house. And so you think, you know, well, maybe that would be something like it. But back in July 4th of 2018, I got to a place that I thought in Mexico would be somewhat like what we would think maybe was the regions beyond. I was invited out to go speak into two of our, we have in the state of Chiapas, which is the southern part of Mexico, bordering Guatemala, we have about 10 to 12 churches. And those churches are mainly small churches, but what they do is they work in the mountains and they establish missions or preaching points. So I got invited to come down to speak in a couple of these preaching points to get to know the places, because they have a lot of needs. And so they were hoping that maybe we could help them out. And so when we make the trip from Guadalajara, fly out of Guadalajara into the capital of Chiapas, it's like an hour and a half flight. And then from there, it's about a 6 hour bus ride to our base town, which is right on the border with Guatemala. And then we go 2 hours up into the mountains. And we get up to, well, this is what Chiapas looks like. A little bit. It's very rural. Chiapas, very mountainous. There's also what they call the jungle of Mexico is in this state. And eventually we would get from being here to the next, I think the next slide has it on there if we could advance, to a place called Bella Vista. And in Bella Vista, we have one of our churches is right behind where that truck and that brown building is. Right behind it is the Alliance Church. And from there, we would go approximately 2 hours up into those mountains. And from there, up in that area is where they've begun to establish some of these mission points. It's very interesting that the people, the guys that are doing the work, when we would go up into these sections, but we go up in the car, and they walk. So one of the guys walks up, it takes him like 3 hours to walk up to one of these places to get to it, and he does that every Sunday. But as you'd go, you notice that the travel is different. When you were leaving Bella Vista, everything is it's concrete. And then as you begin to get going, you find that the road becomes like this. And then it's just dirt and there's potholes. And you can imagine what it gets like in the rainy season. Mexico has two seasons, dry season, 6 months. And then the rainy season comes and it rains every day. Same time of day, every day it rains. But these kind of roads pretty much wash out it's just mud. You can hardly get up them, you know, sometimes. But the road becomes like that. Dirt becomes like from two lanes to one lane. Everything is really tight. And really, two cars is very hard for them to get, you know, to get by. And then as you continue up, and like I said, on this particular time, we were going up about, I think about 1,500 feet, about an hour and a half driving. And you can see behind you that this is the kind of roads that you end up going. You're just going round and round and round, and you don't see anything. It's just trees and mountains, and there's no, you don't see any people around, you don't see really any houses. And then after we were traveling for this good hour and a half, then finally we came to a sharp turn. On the right was a small house, and then on the left was the next slide, was this. And this was, it's called El Rincón, which means the corner in Spanish. And this is one of our Alliance preaching points up in the hills, up in the mountains. And on this particular day, and you can see this, there's no electricity in this building at all. It's just, you have to meet in the morning, so you can see. It's just basically has, I think, room for about maybe 50 people, and it's just pretty much benches inside. But dirt floor, there's no cement. And this is the kind of place where they would look and say, can we help? Can you guys help us? You know, it's a place where there's a great deal of need. The people that live up in this area of Mexico, as I said, it's pretty remote. And in many places in Mexico, the people up in these areas are largely forgotten. You know, the government doesn't do a lot with them. And so they're pretty much left alone. And for them, not having a church like this, and on this particular day, I think there was 12 people that came when we had our service and stuff. There's very, very little opportunity or access for them to hear the message. If you don't have a preaching point there, then the people probably aren't going to hear. Most of these people aren't, you know, traveling down into the what would be called the city, which is a place of about maybe 15,000 people. That'd be a city for them. And so somehow somebody's got to go up into these places with a message to reach into the people. And for the most part, like I said, people don't have access. They don't have anyone to tell them about the message. And as we got up into the section, I thought to myself, well, maybe this would be something, this kind of area would be a place that when A.B. Simpson, if you remember, wrote many hymns. And he wrote one of the hymns that has the title of our missions conference. And it's called "To the Regions Beyond." And so he wrote. Have you guys sung that? So you know how it goes. I thought, well, maybe because he wrote that hymn in 1904. So a long time ago, 115 years ago, he wrote that. And I thought, well, maybe when he was thinking about these regions beyond, he had a place like this in mind. And so thinking of that, I wanted us to look at the words, because really when him being the founder of the Alliance and him sending out missionaries in the 1880s, I wonder what was in his mind when he thought about the regions beyond. And what was he really thinking about? And I think this hymn describes it for us. So what I wanted to do is just have us just read these what he's saying, and then think about it, because many times when we're singing hymns, or I don't know, maybe it's hymns or choruses, whatever you want to sing, we just sing them and you don't think about what it's saying. At least I did that. I don't know. Maybe you guys don't. I would just sing them mechanically. But there's a lot of things in this that is very important for us. This is what he says. He says, "To the regions beyond, I must go, I must go, where the story has never been told. To the millions that never have heard of his love, I must tell the sweet story of old. To the hardest of places he calls me to go, never thinking of comfort and ease. The world may pronounce me a dreamer, a fool, enough if the master I please." And then if we could advance one more. And it says, "Oh, you that are spending your leisure and powers in those pleasures so foolish and fond, awake from selfishness, folly, and sin, and go to the regions beyond. There are other lost sheep that the master must bring, and to them must the message be told. He sends me to gather them out of all lands and welcome them back to his fold." And then the last part of it goes as follows. "To the regions beyond, I must go, till all the world, his salvation shall know." And so as you look at those verses and you begin to think, and as I read them over, certain parts of that hymn began to stick out. And so when I thought, okay, so what was he really trying to say? You know, what are the reasons beyond, according to Dr. Simpson? And I thought from that first stanza, the reasons beyond meant simply that a place where the story had never been what? Never been told. And that can really be anywhere, right? That can be a place is way, way, way down in central Mexico, or that can be over here. You know, maybe towns around here that people never go to those places and people never hear. So it's a place where the story's never been told. And then in the second stanza, he says to us, it's the place that could be one of the hardest places to go. And that kind of makes us think, I don't know if I want to do that or not. But he says the hardest place to go, and probably if you were to say to someone, well, that's where I want to go, they would say you are a what? A fool. You know, what do you do that for? Well, we know why, because God asks us to do it. He puts a call on our lives. And then the third stanza is one where he talks about, or really he's telling the church to respond and to act and to sacrifice, you know, and tells us, well, I want you to go. Have your focus on my vision, as we saw in the Proverbs verse written in Sunday school. Have my vision and go. And then in the fourth one, he gives us the reason why. Always have to have a reason to do stuff, right? And that's what he says to us, the reason being that there are lost sheep that are not in the fold. And that's really the reason why we will go, right? Because there are lost sheep that have to hear this message. And then he ends it by just encouraging us again to the reason beyond, I must go. It's interesting he doesn't say the reason beyond, I think I'm going to go. Or maybe, let me think that over. He says, no, to the reasons beyond, I must go. And that was his main push as he gave us this hymn. And to think about, you know, the need in the world today. There's such a great need for people overseas in other countries as well as here in the United States. When we think about the great need, what comes to your mind? What do you guys think about? Yeah? Hunger is a need. What other needs do people have? I mean, there's all kinds that people might have. But it's interesting that if we were to look at, and if we study any of look at any of the studies that are done on missions today, we find that so many people today in the world have never even heard about Jesus, never heard about him. There's a certain region, and we'll talk about that just a little bit. It's called the 1040 window, where the majority of the unreached people are located. It says in that region, which involves roughly 3 billion people, it says the amount of people in those regions will be 81% that have never even heard the name Jesus. They don't even know who he is. That's very different than, you know, when we talk about, here in the United States, most people have at least heard the name. They know something about Jesus. But these people have never even come into contact with someone like you. They've never met someone like us. And so, in this hymn, when he says, to the regions beyond, I must go, then that gives us a little more idea of the urgency to do this. Because there's a great deal of urgency today to get the message out. When we think about the availability today, it's kind of unbelievable. There are more believers today than ever, right? There's more Christians today in the world than there ever has been. There's more churches now than ever have been. There's more missionaries than ever. And when you take, you know, people take out their cell phones and the social media and all that stuff, there's more and more opportunities for people to hear about the gospel than there has ever been before. But when we think about the need is also greater than ever before. Does anybody have an idea how many ethnic groups there are in the world?
6,700.
Okay, how much?
About 6,700.
Okay. 6,700, what do you think? More or less. Well, they only gave us on that note, they only gave us the number of groups that were unreached. The total number of groups is 17,000. That they identify people as, you know, a different language, different culture, different customs, all that. There's 17,000 of these groups. And if you were to look at today the number of those groups that are considered to be unreached. An unreached people group is someone that is 2% or less with an evangelical witness. There's nobody there within that community that can tell them about Jesus. Then roughly there's 7,000 of these groups still around. 7,000 groups that are about 40% of all the people groups in the world, 3 billion people, and so that tells us that there is this unbelievable need, right? Unbelievable amount of need today. Still, when Jesus walked the earth, how many people were living approximately? They say 250 million, right? 250 million people. Today, 7 billion. And of those 7 billion, almost half of them have never, ever heard the message. So that brings us to the point of thinking we have, is this a great need to bring the message to the people? We have an interesting verse in Matthew 24 and verse 14 that Jesus gave to us that talks about basically what our job is. You know, why have we been placed here on the earth? And this is what he says. He says, "And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations." And then he says, "The end will come." Right? So based on what Jesus says in Matthew 24, 14, what would be our responsibility? What are we supposed to be doing as you know, we live? Yeah. And he says to us, he tells us it's going to happen. He says, "And this gospel of the kingdom, you know, will be preached." And then he goes on to say, "In the whole world as a testimony to all nations." And then he'll come back. So as we think about the Great Commission and where we stand, it seems like there's an awful lot that has to be done. The word that Jesus uses here that's probably the key word for us is that he's talking about we're preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations. I don't think it's beyond, by accident Jesus uses the word nations once again, because in Matthew 28 and the Great Commission, he also says that, right? He says, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations." So one of the big questions we will need to ask when we talk about the Great Commission and actually fulfilling the Great Commission is, well, what did he mean by nations? What was Jesus saying? For many people, if you use the word nations, what comes to their mind? Well, maybe what comes to your mind? I think, maybe Russia, Afghanistan, Canada, Japan, all these flags. These would be the nations. But what was the word that Jesus actually used? There's several words he could have used in the Greek language to define what he meant by that. Yeah. So what was do you know what the actual word was for nation? The actual word is the word that you and I use for ethnic group. The word's ethne is the word. So when Jesus said, "Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations," he said, "Go and make disciples of all ethne," or all ethnic groups. So that begins to give us an idea then of what he really meant by the Great Commission. You know, reaching into the ethnic groups. So that's why we look at it and say, well, how many of these are there? Well, there's 17,000. How many are unreached? 7,000 of them. And so if Jesus gave us the Great Commission back 2,000 years ago, and still today almost half haven't received the message, they don't have a witness among them, and it tells us that there's just an awful lot has to be done. And the great thing is that you and I have been given the privilege to do the work, all of us, right? So what he leaves us with then is the word go. That's what Jesus says. "Go, therefore, and make the disciples." And then, so really for us then to understand what the word the nations mean, or ethne, then we want to ask ourselves the question, well, you know, where are these people? Who are these people? Where do you have to go in order to fulfill the Great Commission? And that brings us to the idea that, well, to reach out to the Great Commission, we're going to need to go to a place that, as I mentioned earlier, that called the 1040 window. If we could go to that one, I think that comes up next. In order to fulfill the Great Commission, we need to go to these places. And in the 1040 window, basically involving China, India, the Middle East, Central and West Africa, those are like the main sections of what the 1040 window is. These are the places where you find the majority of those 7,000 unreached people groups. That's where they're located at today. The country that has the most, over 2,000 of these ethnic groups, is India. India is the largest of all. And so there you would think that will be an emphasis of missions in the future, right? And in the Alliance, we have approximately 80% of our missionaries working in these areas. So traditionally, years ago, where were the missionaries located for the Alliance? Where did all the mission people come for the conferences? South America was a lot. It's a lot from Africa. And now you don't see that. Very few from South America. We don't have hardly anybody in South America anymore, because South America has largely been reached in the sense of there is a witness there for the people if they want to, you know, get the message. So this is where we want to be going. And in particular in Mexico, among us, there are 330 of these ethnic groups in Mexico. So there's quite a few there. We are among our national church, we have two people in particular that are working with these types of groups. And one is our national church president. His name is Tomas Bencomo. And he's working with a group called the Tarahumara Indians. He's been working with them for over 30 years. And he went into them when there was no one else around. Nobody was going into these people. They live in what is called the Copper Canyon. If some of you can take trips into this area of Chihuahua, Mexico. It's right on the border, I think, it's right under El Paso there in Ciudad Juarez. And you see these people that live in the mountains, and nobody knows much about them at all. They don't have schools, they don't have medical, they don't have hardly anything. And he decided, the Lord put in his heart to go, and over 25 years ago, he went on mule and on horseback into places where nobody had ever gone. And so he's worked with the Tarahumaras and also the Pima, two groups that he's been working with, and now there are churches in those groups. Another person in our national church in Mexico, his name is Dr. Luis Hurtado, who is from the central part of Mexico, and he goes and works now with a group of indigenous people in one of our other states called San Luis. And he's working among the Pame as a medical doctor. So they're just examples of people who have decided to go to what we would say are regions beyond, you know, where nobody's going into. No one's reaching into these areas. If we would do those things, we'll find that there's a great reward, right? In Revelation chapter 7 and verses 9 through 10, it talks to us a little bit about what things are going to look like in the future. And I think it speaks to us that if we participate in the commission, God is going to do great things. It says this. It says, "After this I looked, and there before me was a great multitude of that no one could count, from every nation, tribe, people, and language, standing before the throne and before the Lamb. They were wearing white robes and were holding palm branches in their hands, and they cried out in a loud voice, 'Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb.'" So think about those verses. John's talking about the future, right? And he's talking about who's going to be standing in front of the Lamb. And he says to us, they're going to be what? Nation, every nation, tribe, people, language. They're all going to be there. That's what heaven is going to be like. Heaven's going to be like with multitudes of languages. Maybe up there we'll all understand everybody. I don't know. But it's going to be like that. It's going to be people from every place. And our job is to go and get those people. And go and find those people and bring the message to them. To all these ethnic groups. So that they have what you and I had. Which was, excuse me, an opportunity. Everybody here among us experienced someone else coming to them and talking to them. You all had someone say to you, tell you about Jesus. Amen. Yeah? If nobody did that, would you just somehow have come up with it? I don't think so. In my case, somebody had to come to me and tell me. And the people are waiting to have an opportunity to hear the message. In Romans chapter 10 and verse 17, Paul tells us that faith comes from what?
Hearing.
And hearing is through the word, right? So the people have to hear the message. And so somebody has to go. Somebody's got to take the message. Somebody has to be like, if you remember a missionary to China by the name of Hudson Taylor, and he came from England, he had to cross oceans to go, months to go. Some people have to cross mountains. Some people have to go to these places. But somebody has to answer the call to do it. And when that happens, then we have the promises that, according to this verse in Revelation, that there are going to be people there that are going to respond. That, for us, I think, is the beautiful part of this, to see that there will be people who will respond. In Mexico today, there is one group in particular I mentioned in Sunday school that is considered to be one of the least reached or in people groups in that study. When we talk about the 7,000 groups that aren't reached, this one in Mexico would be included. Most of the other groups in Mexico and ethnic groups have, you know, 1 to 2% of believers in them, so they don't consider them part of. But this group is called the Huichol, and they live in the state where we live. And the Huichol are a group of 51,000 people, and today there is only 0.4% that are believers. When you go into these areas, you find that for a person that becomes a believer, it's very, very costly for them. If they become a believer, the people in their pueblo respond, and they kick them out by force. And they, as I said earlier, their land is all communal. Animals communal, everything they have they don't own, and so it's owned by the community. And when they become a Christian, it's either you decide one thing or the other. Either you decide to stay and you support all the things the community does, or you leave. And so they have to make that choice. And we have people that have left, been expelled from their communities. Somebody's got to tell these people the message, right? And so I think that when we talk about the Huichol, or you can talk about many other types of people groups, I think that these are the people that Jesus had in mind in John chapter 10. So if we return to John chapter 10 and verses 14 to 16, we want to just look at what Jesus has to say to us. It's very important things he says, and I just want to read 14 to 16 to begin with. And he says this. He says, "I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd." So, very key verses for us, because it tells us a lot about these ethnic groups, right? If you look back in this particular passage, Jesus uses the phrase, "I am," in two descriptions of himself. In verses 9 and 10, he begins by saying this. He says, "I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." He says there that he is the gate. Why is that important? You know, when Jesus uses that phrase, "I am," he does it 7 times in John. Every time he uses it, the quote that he's coming off of is Exodus chapter 3 and verse 14, when God describes himself as "I am," right? So Jesus is using that same phrase to describe himself as being God, and then he says, "I am the gate." Well, the gate to what? Yeah, the gate to heaven, right? The gate to know God is only through Jesus. And if you can picture in your mind the gates back in this time in the sheep pen, what did it look like? Because, I mean, I'm assuming that many of you folks have worked with pens all your life. If you're in the farm, you'd know exactly what that is. In the first century, and when Jesus was walking around the sheep pen, how many gates or entrances and exits did it have? It had one. And where did the shepherd put himself? Yeah, right at the gate at nighttime. He was the one that controlled anyone that would come in or go out. And so Jesus uses that phrase to describe himself. He says, "I am the gate." And that goes right along with what he says in John 14:6, when he says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me." So he describes for us and says, "I am the only way. There is no other way." That's the only way to come into a relationship with the Father is through Jesus. So that tells us something very important when we think about, I don't know if you have read in the video, there was a guy sitting there, I think with a white shirt on, and said, "I am a Sikh. And Buddhism, Christianity, and Islam is all the same." Well, if you look at what Jesus says, he says, it's not the same. Right? There is only one way, and that is through Jesus. So he says to us, I am the gate. And then he goes down in verse 14 and he begins to explain again what he is. He says, I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. So what would the good shepherd be? There are many types of shepherds that we could run into, right? There are shepherds who are put in charge of a flock, but they're just kind of like a hired hand. It'd be like the Aztecs would have been when I mentioned earlier they were mercenaries. They would fight wars for other groups before they became powerful. And if the war was going bad, what would they do? Say, hey, you're not paying me enough to die here. I'm gone. And they'd leave. Well, the shepherd would be the same way. If he's not a good shepherd, and somebody comes to attack, maybe it's a wolf, or maybe it's a person, to steal the sheep. And if it's a little bit too dangerous, he says, hey, this isn't worth it. I'm out of here. And he's gone. But Jesus says that I am the good shepherd. And so what does the good shepherd do, according to Jesus here?
Protects the sheep.
Yeah. And to what extent?
Lays down his life.
He lays down his life. So he's saying about the sheep, you and I being sheep, that he laid down his life for you. He laid down his life for me. He laid down his life for every one of these ethnic groups and the people that belong to those ethnic groups. Every single one of them, Jesus died for them in the same way. Right? And that shows us the extent of the love that God has for every single person that has ever been born. Everybody's been born in the image of God. Everybody is valuable, important to God. He wants everyone to come to know God. So with that in mind, then, we look down in these verses and see the following. He says, I laid down my life for the sheep. And then he says, I have sheep that are not of this sheep pen. So who might those sheep be? The sheep pen that he was talking about probably in the first century here is who? Who was in that sheep pen?
Jews.
Yeah, the Israelites. Right? He came to seek and save those who are lost, so the Jews to begin with. And now he's saying to us, he's saying, well, I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen that I must bring also. So who are those guys?
Gentiles.
Yeah, they're you and me. We're included in those other sheep. And there are many, many, many other sheep today that are still there. And somebody has to bring the message to these other sheep. And that job has been given to you and to me to do that. Right? The thing that really grabs my attention when he talks about these other sheep, he says that they too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. So he says they will hear my voice or listen to my voice. What did that mean? When somebody hears the voice or listens, what is he really trying to say? What will those people do then when the message comes? They're going to respond. Yeah, they're going to say yes. And so he's saying to us, or saying to the disciples in the first century, these other people, these Gentiles, they're worth going to because they are going to respond. Maybe not everybody, but there are people. And that goes right along with Revelation chapter 7, 9, and 10, where it talks about every nation, language, and group that's going to be in heaven. Somebody is going to respond from all of these groups. And so for you and for me, it is worthwhile going to these regions beyond. Jesus gave us the example when he laid down his life. And for many of the missionaries, if you folks remember studying some of the first missionaries that went out with the Alliance, they would go to places, many of them went to Africa to begin with, and they would go on ships, right? And I think they're like 2-3 months to get there. Most of them, from what I understand, did not buy round-trip tickets. Right? And why didn't they do that? Because probably some of them figured they weren't coming back. The commission was that important, that they were willing to give whatever they had in order to do what God asked them to do. So when you and I think about then the need today and what Jesus is saying here, he's saying that these other sheep are there, someone needs to go, they're going to listen, they're going to respond. It might be costly. Probably is going to be very costly. And you and I know today that the people that are in this 1040 window, those people are very resistant. They don't necessarily want us around. But the commission says to go to all nations, all the groups. So what did Paul understand by this? Because we're looking here at Jesus and what Jesus said. And Paul, in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, talks a little bit about what he thought about the regions beyond. For Jesus, I think we can say he meant the regions beyond were anyone, right, among the Gentiles who did not know. Paul says this in 2 Corinthians 10, verses 14 and following. He says, "We are not going too far in our boasting, as would be the case if we had not come to you. For we did get as far as you with the gospel of Christ, or to Corinth. Neither do we go beyond our limits by boasting of work done by others. Our hope is that as your faith continues to grow, our sphere of activity among you will greatly expand, so that we can preach the gospel in the regions beyond you." So for Paul, where was that? Anybody have an idea what might have been the regions beyond he was talking about there? Well, I think a lot of people think it was Spain. Because at this point in time, the message hadn't gotten really out there to Spain. So for Paul, he had a certain region, a place where God had placed on his life. And so today, as we think about closing, I want to ask the question, what region or what people or what group or what ethnic group would God place upon you and upon your heart to reach? You can reach these groups in many ways. And we talked about there's four different arms you could go with the Alliance to reach these people, or you can take part in one of three things. You can go, give, or pray. It's all the same, right? God asks us to do certain things in the commission, and we just need to be obedient in the way he asks us to do it. So I'm going to ask Pastor if he would come and lead us in closing as we consider what region beyond is God asking us to work in and minister to. Pastor, if you'd come.